time for Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires. It's live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave.
You're a mean one, Mr. Grinch. You really are a heel. You're as cuddly as a cactus. You're as charming as an eel, Mr. Grinch. You're a bad banana with a greasy black peel.
Is that a commentary? What mood do you think I'm in today, Dave?
Oh, could be close to that. Yeah, sure.
Welcome to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart along with Dave Bourne, and where we talk things that affect your quality of life, affect your pocketbook in Marion and Polk Counties and Salem, Kaiser, and the surrounding area. Boy, there's a lot of things in the news, and that's what we're talking about today. A lot of things in the news that interact and intersect with things we've already talked about in the show this week. I'm still laughing about the Grinch thing. I think Dave thinks that I'm going to go on some rants today, but I try to be positive, very positive and bullish on our community. That doesn't mean we don't have things that we can fix. We had Laura Dorn on yesterday, and she's a realtor, and I learned a lot.
I did, too. 12% of houses in, the houses in Kaiser holding their resale value at 12%. That's pretty good.
Went up 12% in the last
year.
Went up 12% in the last year. And the number that really struck me is the inventory. So 3 months of inventory. That means if no new houses came in the market, every house that's on the market today would be gone in 3 months, 90 days.
That's a short supply.
That is a short supply. When you talk about, it's not like we have, that's a lot of houses though, with 200,000 in say 200,000 homes in Salem Kaiser. But also, and we didn't hear it on air, we heard it during a break, but for her, and this was part of the discussion about the professionals in the industry, she made money in 2009. She had great years in 2009 and 2010, and she had been doing it by then. She had been doing it 18 years or more.
Right.
So you have connections with the whole vertical stream of the industry and banks included. She said, unfortunately, a lot of those sales were bank sold when people lost their houses. But those are the numbers that really stuck me with Laura Dorn yesterday. I wanted to wrap up with that because there's so many things that we were talking about. It's hard to swing back and make points out of them, but 3 months supply in housing is not very much. And the fact that homes in Kaiser, hey, if it was worth $200,000, 12%. So
that's
200 to 224 in a year. Amazing. Anyway, we thank her for being with us and hope we'll have her back at some point and we'll talk any additional changes in the housing market. All right, so you're listening to Newsmakers. This is Brent DeHart, Dave Bourne, 1430 KYKN, and we encourage you to contact us. We've got an email address, kyknnewsmakers@gmail.com. kyknnewsmakers@gmail.com. If you've got an idea for the show, if you've got a question about the show, if you'd like to be on the show, any feedback, we'd be happy to have it. And also, we have our podcast, right? Right
on the website. Yes, we
do. Somebody asked me that. Actually, I just came from a meeting and they said, I miss so-and-so being on your show. And I'm like, you can go to the website and get that. So kyknn.com, look for Newsmakers, click on that. And any shows we've done previously, be it the mayor, that we talked to this week.
We talked to him twice.
Yeah, county commissioner, any of that, and you want to hear it again, be sure to hit the podcast. So speaking of the mayor, we ran out of time the other day. We're talking about some gasoline topics of interest, and the mayor came on, and he was fired up.
Yeah,
And I loved it. He was very passionate. He was very articulate.
Yeah.
You know, he knew... he laid out what the issue was and how he felt about it, and it was great to have him on. Unfortunately, we did run out of time on him. We blew right through a commercial break, but that's Mayor Chuck Bennett in City of Salem talking about some land use actions that he thought were never should have happened. I had some fun facts. We're talking back gasoline. I'm going to swing that back. You ready?
Okay. Lay it on me.
All right. So and we talked about this a little bit on the air, but it's a fallacy, actually, that if there's a tanker at the gas station, that it's going to stir up sediment in the tank, and you shouldn't buy. You have to wait for the sediment. Otherwise, all that sediment's going to end up in your gas tank and in your engine. Used to be true. presumably.
Before 1990, right?
Yeah, in the 90s, there was a huge DEQ push to replace all aging tanks. And it's a long story, but the Oregon Gasoline Dealers was involved and the Capitol and so forth, and got some money to help for rural Oregon, which is very hard to expend, you know, a very big expense when you're not selling a lot of gallons.
Right.
Virtually every tank in Oregon is, you know, vintage 90s or earlier, and they're double wall tanks and so on and so forth. Plus, now you're in an era of highly refined gasoline. And so those of us in the Mid-Valley, if you're buying from a major brand gas station, those tanks are less than 25 years old, and I really don't think you have to worry about it.
Nope.
Good. Plus, I'll give this example. So the truck and the trailer's driving down the road, you know, has an oil company name on it, or it's a common carrier. Guess how many gallons?
How many?
11,400 gallons is the maximum, and that's typically what they would see, 11,000 gallons. So when you go to Fred Meyer, or if you go to Chevron, wherever you go, well, definitely Fred Meyer, Safeway, some of the higher volume ones, they're receiving one of those tank and trailers every day, sometimes multiple times, certainly in Costco, multiple times a day. There is no time for any sediment to settle, if there ever was any. And if you're even if you're an average station, you're receiving a truck and trailer about every other day.
Right.
Every day and a half to every 2 days. So, all right, fun facts and gas. Someday we're going to do an entire show on self-serve and why we have self-serve in Oregon. And
we don't.
Right, we don't have self-serve in Oregon. Well, we do. We do.
Actually, I ran into a station in Astoria that had one. It was kind of cool.
Well, so, and it used to, yeah, in some of the rural areas they start to do it. So, and I used to be a gasoline retailer, so... All of these things, but the history is pretty fascinating and laugh out loud if it were not so tragic. But you can self-serve if it's diesel. The self-serve ban does not apply to diesel rigs.
Really?
Yeah. It doesn't apply to motorcycles. It doesn't apply to airplanes. It's dangerous to fuel your car, but it's not dangerous to self-serve an airplane, mind you. If you belong to a country club, if you belong to a co-op, if you have a Pacific Pride card... You know, so the difference between us and New Jersey, the only other state that has a self-serve ban, is they have a self-serve ban. Here, they only ban it at the retail stations that accept cash that serve the general public. But everybody else has an exception.
That makes no sense.
Yeah, tell me about it.
None.
And I have a funny story. I always like the funny stories, and we all have them in our industry. So it was early on. We were owning this gas station. It was 8 degrees out. And guy pulls in and his gas cap is all frozen, right? And of course, we have gasoline attendants, highly trained professional sorts. And
yeah, I used to do that.
Yeah, and it had the little metal cap with a keyhole in it. And
sure.
It was frozen. So it got frozen. It was frozen.
Oh, okay.
Guess what he did?
I'm afraid to ask.
He got out his lighter.
No! Wow.
So, yeah, that was the best one. He got his lighter, and he's going to defrost the gas cap.
And the car owner should have said, no.
Fun fact about gasoline, it's not explosive at all, actually. Flammable, but not explosive. What is explosive? The vapors.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
So, a lot of things. I don't know. Maybe you can tell us if this is an interesting topic or not. But another thing that intersected with us and our guests, we had the Public Works Director on. We're talking about water last week. Mm-hmm. And then in the news, it's talking about how Brooks, the little unincorporated town of Brooks, they get their water from Shemeketa Community College well.
I read a little bit about that today.
So I just thought that was interesting.
That is interesting.
You never know in the past how things come to pass and deals get made, and there's a 2-mile pipeline, and it's a well from the community college, and they survive. You know, they're providing water.
Huh.
So it's not Salem City Water. It's not the Kaiser Wells, which you would think would be very close. And anyway, that's in the news today. And some of these things, Salem Reporter, I'm a fan. We had their publisher on, and let's talk about their publisher. So Les Zeitz. I have to say that slower. Les Zeitz. He's a publisher. His family owns the Kaiser Times.
Yeah.
And hey, I just want to say a shout out and thank the Kaiser. They hired a local boy recently. So Matt Rawlings, welcome to the Kaiser Times. He's a local boy, educated here. Oregon Duck. He's a sports writer for Pamplin Media Group, or was.
Was.
And now he's on board at the Kaiser Times. Good hire. Kaiser Times. Good hire. Fine young man. So hopefully as an associate editor and reporter, it would be nice to have him in the community. So at any rate, another locally owned media outlet. And anyway, the Salem, I'm Salem Reporter,
mm-hmm.
one of our partners on our webpage.
Right.
So if you're missing some of these and you want to hit the highlights of the news, you can go to the KYKN webpage and hit the news from the Salem Reporter. So, all right. Also, we had talked this week, a school board member.
Yes.
And the school board member, Kathy Goss, started filling us in on a lot of things having to do with policy. And it's just a small note, but Christy Perry, who's the superintendent, she waxed poetic about, really sung her praises. New contract, $239,000 a year.
Ah.
That's just a little bit more than I make here.
Just a little bit.
Yeah, $239,000 a year. And then it's going to bump to $248,000. But it is, what, the second largest school district? We have to have Superintendent Perry on. Second largest school district. And honestly, and other organizations, either be they nonprofits or these governmental, and to get top quality executives, the salaries have to be huge.
Wow.
So don't begrudge her, but it is something the public should be aware of. It's like,
and she's a good negotiator. I need to learn how to negotiate like that.
All right, we're going to take a break here and come back and talk a little bit about our state government and some of the personalities there. This is Brent DeHart along with Dave Bourne. You're listening to Newsmakers, 1430 KYKN, Salem's listening.
Newsmakers continues with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Santa Claus, here comes Santa Claus, right down Santa Claus Lane. Blixin' and blixin' and all his reindeers pulling on the rain.
Can you believe it? Like a week and a half away.
I love it. I can't wait. You been out ice skating yet?
No.
At Salem on Ice?
Yeah.
Park?
I,
that's right.
I have that on my bucket list, yeah.
Okay. Well, welcome back, everyone. Anything in the news you guys want to talk about today on Newsmakers, be sure to give us a call. 503-393-1430 is the number. 503-393-1430. Give us a call. Something that we're talking about or something you'd like us to talk about, give us a call. We'll put you on the air and give you a shot. Couple things about state government we're talking about that is in the news. Our labor commissioner, who likes to be in the news, his name is Brad Avakian. You know him?
Yes, labor secretary. Or something.
He's the commissioner, Bureau of Labor and Industries, also known as BOLI. And it was nice to see the legislatures honestly take his department to task a little bit. Of course, he wasn't there. He sent, according to the news report, he sent three relatively new employees for the scolding.
That makes no sense.
So here's a bill. It's about pay equity. It's one of the most comprehensive laws about what regulates what employers have to pay and how they have to have pay equity and so forth and all the restrictions. And the governor signed this into law in June of 2017. They're just getting around to communicating to the state's employers what they have to do to comply. And there's like
government red tape.
We are. Your guess is as good as I am.
Yeah.
But, you know, they didn't really have a good answer. The legislators said, hey, we passed this 18 months ago. Why does it take so long to communicate? We have 130,000 employers in the state of Oregon.
Yeah.
So 130,000 employers. They've communicated with about 5,000. So a lot of people are going to find themselves under new regulations they don't fully understand, and they're just getting briefed on right now.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nice of the labor commissioner to send three relatively new employees down to get the scolding from the legislature and not be able to answer the question, why have you not administered what we told you to do?
Which would be a letter, right, from the state?
You would think there'd be trainings, employer. Actually, Bureau of Labor and Industries does have a division that is training for employers to help them understand and comply with labor laws, wage and hour laws, things I've taken a number of myself, things having to do with sexual harassment, things having to do with, like I said, wage and hour laws and all sorts of things. And, you know, that's nice. It's an aid to employers. So too often I see the department only think about employees. Right. And not so much about
employers.
Right. And occasionally in this, I guess they didn't think it was a priority to inform employers of the new law that they're going to be held under. So get this, they are held responsible for unintentional pay disparities. Like, oh, I didn't realize kind of things, that maybe it wasn't an evil cretin, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not to say there wasn't ever an employer ever anywhere that wasn't an evil cretin, but say they're not an evil cretin, but they didn't realize that so-and-so hadn't had a raise and they happened to be in a protected class. And how many protected classes? Because there's lots of them.
Yeah, but nobody should be in a protective class. Come on, we're all the same.
Yeah. So actually, this gentleman, he ran for Secretary of State.
Yeah.
Right, Democrat, ran for Secretary of State. Dennis Richardson won the
election. I remember that. Yeah.
Shocking. We had the first Republican to get elected to a statewide office, what, since 80s, early 90s, or 80s, I think. And
since the Stone Age, yeah.
The interesting thing about the gentleman is, rumor has it,
oh boy,
that a number of people in his own party find him unpleasant.
Unpleasant.
Did I say that diplomatically enough?
Yeah, I think okay. so. Yeah.
Rumor has it that even a good percentage of people in his own party find him somewhat undesirable and apparently voted that way. And we'll take Dennis Richardson. More praise to Dennis Richardson, who I'm a fan of. I like what he's been doing at the Secretary of State's office. And actually, at this Christmas, we wish him and his family well and hope for his health to rebound fully. He's been having some health challenges this year, but Dennis Richardson, our Secretary of State, beat Brad Avakian, so he's my hero.
Right.
All right. Too often, it just seems like they're after things that protect PERS. All right, so I've got an Oregon story while we're talking about this statewide thing, and it has to do with PERS. Okay. So I was a city councilor, as you know, and during this time, there was this big push for a conflict of interest. There was like, you really have to watch. People are going to have conflicts of interest. They're going to get on public bodies and decision-making bodies, and they're going to have a conflict of interest. You know, what about your business interest? What [S2] Sure. [S1] About your pocket? Blah, 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 blah. So they developed this, and we're volunteers, right?
Yeah.
It's not like we're paid. So they developed this whole questionnaire thing, and you had to fill in this thing and sign it and disclose everything. They wanted to know my father-in-law's address.
What?
Now, they wanted to know every relative's address.
Oh, sure.
Every relative's address and who they work for in the state. And I'm like, no. No, my father-in-law is a private person.
He's right.
He's since passed, but he's a private person who, he's got a person that tears out the address label of his magazines before he recycles them, right?
Good man.
So he, yeah, I mean, they have no business knowing where my father-in-law lives or where he ever worked, right?
Right.
I found that offensive. I thought that, you know, this sunshine law thing has gone way too far. They're really looking into your volunteers on any volunteer policymaking body, right?
They're acting like it's a secret. Yeah, they're acting like it's a Secret Service background. Oh, yeah.
We're all in there to line our pockets, right?
Yeah. Okay.
So
uh-huh.
Then, at the same time, people are and have been for decades. People are serving on the PERS board. They're making decisions on PERS and the benefits, right? And this is happening for decades.
Decades.
Who are on PERS? They're going to be recipients of PERS.
That would be a conflict of interest.
And so they're making a decision not to update the mortality tables, so the checks are higher. They're making a decision not to change, you know, the promised interest rate, not to change this. Da, 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 da. How is that happening in Oregon? How do you have people who's like, well, this determines my retirement, but I'm going to be a part of deciding how it's managed and what the rules are and when you can. Wow. So the dichotomy is crazy. And the end of the story for me at City Council, it was at the end of when I was going to serve. So I just never filled it out. And within a few months, I resigned and had finished my 4 years and so forth. Anyway, I just thought that was striking. So that somewhat connected.
That is kind of bizarre.
All right. So now I have a bully story.
Ooh.
So I was an employer. Still am, but it was an employer. All right. I got 2 minutes. This is going to fit. And I had an employee who didn't like to listen. So hopefully I wasn't one of the evil Cretan employers, right?
I highly
doubt
that.
But she was, my employee was making sandwiches for the general public. And this is, you know, late 90s, say.
Okay.
And we were, it was the era where ushering in plastic gloves, where people started wearing plastic gloves when they're handling your food. And so that was my policy. So my policy is when you take your order and you smart man, she had a skin condition as well, which looked for client for the client, you know, it was a little off-putting, but whatever. She wouldn't wear the gloves. And so I told her again, I wrote her up, I told her again, and I fired her. She didn't, wouldn't wear the gloves.
Wow.
Lo and behold, she makes a case and she files a complaint with the Bureau of Labor and Industries that I had unpaid wages and it was a discrimination against women, right? So it's discriminatory and that I hadn't paid it overtime wages that she was due. Fortunately, when we went in and had an interview, by the time we went back and forth and the employee admitted, yes, he told me to do that. No, I didn't. Okay, why? Well, I didn't want to kind of thing. And then she took me out, the person from Boley took me out in the hall and says, I don't know what her problem is, but don't worry about this. Go home.
Nice.
So, sensible. Sensible. Very. I liked it. That went nowhere. And it was after that, there was like, oh, but I got, I paid, all, I worked all this overtime. All right. All right. So I will try to hurry here. Basically, she had a calendar that she wrote on home hours that she worked. And then she told Boley she worked those hours and I never paid her for it. Mind you, not one person in the workplace could collaborate a story.
Right.
There was she. I demonstrate all of the work calendars that said she was never scheduled to work those hours. Right.
Good for you.
So I had this documentation, and she had no witnesses. And guess what? They determined that she must be telling the truth, and the calendar reigns supreme. And I owe. And then
even your schedule. Calendar?
Yeah. So I said I want to go on. I want to go to a hearing.
Yeah.
Oh, the hearing will be in Portland, and you must be represented by an attorney.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, basically, and pay now, and we'll figure it out later. Basically, it was guilty until proven innocent.
No.
That's where kind of the activism to protect the employee goes a little crazy.
Yeah.
And then I ended up paying her off.
What?
I had to pay her off because, you know, I'm not going to pay an attorney several hundred dollars an hour to go to Portland and defend me in this thing. And I just couldn't believe it. From then, I've told the story many times, I feel as though the state administered the theft that this woman took the money from me. The state,
yeah.
It was state-administered theft, and she got Boley to administer that theft from me. She didn't work the hours. Matter of fact, she came to me months ahead of time and asked if she could work overtime, and I said, no, absolutely not, and overtime is authorized, but I don't know. Anyway, interesting story.
That's kind of scary, too.
All right, we're going to be right back. You're listening to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Newsmakers with Brent and Dave on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Oh, the weather outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. And since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
Or not.
Man, yeah. It doesn't
show. In the mountains. Let it snow in the mountains.
Mountains
go
is
play
good.
That.
Yeah, keep it up there.
Want it in the valley. Hey. Yeah.
Anything over 600 feet, we're good.
Welcome to back to Newsmakers on KYKN. This is Brent D. Hart with Dave Bourne. We're talking about the pay equity law. And hey, if you're listening and you're a business owner, I would just encourage you to reach out and try to learn about it as fast as you can, especially if there's something inadvertent that's happening, you're still going to be held liable for. So, and apparently it's comprehensive. The law is pretty comprehensive in terms of how many requirements there are, how many protected classes are, and so forth.
So how thick is that booklet?
And it's January 1st that goes into effect. So yeah.
A couple weeks
you
away.
You better be proactive and go in and look at that, because you may have somebody who, you know, you just didn't know deserved a raise, but then they happen to be... fill in the blank, and you could be liable. So
I had an employer once who I knew that they were having money troubles. I didn't ask for a raise. 3 years went by. And he told me about a new hire and how much they were making. And I said, wow, they're making as much as I am. And he goes, what? Well, I'll fix that today. I was like, you can't really afford to do that. Why would you do that? And he felt bad, and so he gave me another dollar, but yeah.
All right, well, I think it's a good thing he brought it up.
Yeah, you know, I don't like to, do you like to, how, I mean, you're a business owner, so you don't really have that issue, but as an employee, do you, should you ask for a raise or should you automatically get one?
I think an employee, I welcome an employee to ask for the raise and sit down and talk about.
Because some companies have yearly reviews.
Right, which that's the best thing.
You know, if the
employer's not doing it, they could do a yearly review.
Okay.
And go over, and a lot of times there's a minimum and maximum for a job description. Sometimes for me in a small business with a lot of entry level employees, we used merit raises and length of time on the job raises.
Oh, okay.
So seniority did count, especially when the scheduling and the things like that. But it should be reviewed. I mean, any good employer.
At least once a year?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, you know.
I think so.
I never got one.
It's just one man's opinion. But.
I never got one in 5 years.
Wow. Yeah, it's helpful because it's even helpful from the employer because they're going to get feedback. They're going to feedback about their other employees. They're going to feedback about if their satisfaction in the workplace with, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of things having to do with workplace practices and goings on that you may not be familiar with. And then, you know, it gives you an opportunity to polish up. One of the things employers miss a lot is to have a written job description. And
true.
Line up, hey, you know, because, and this is where some of us get in trouble, where we have a need and we assign it to so-and-so. So we assign it to Roger and it's not his job description. So,
right. Yeah.
I mean, you have any friends who are suddenly doing two persons jobs? This has happened a lot after those statistics about productivity. Sometimes the productivity is because, well, you have one person doing two persons jobs
or and three.
Actually, a very good friend of mine works for a company I've done business with. He used to have such and such a territory, and then it doubled and then it tripled. Mm. And it was still the same guy.
And still the
salary
same
didn't go three times. No.
Oh, wow.
So in effect, the more productivity because the company's using one man where there should be three people.
Right.
Right. So that kind of creep needs to be discussed. It's hard. A lot of people have their heads down. Small business owners especially have heads down working their business to take the time up and do the review.
Or large businesses where the employee might be fearful of losing their job if they complain.
True.
There's that too.
True. That's what HR department's for if they're big.
But even then, retribution could come.
Yes, indeedy. So
we should discuss that sometime.
Yeah, we'll get an HR professional on here.
Yes, an HR professional.
All right. So let's
call us.
Let's talk about, okay, let's call us. Call us. And if you want to talk today, 503-393-1430, any things we're talking about, anything you want to talk about in the news, 503-393-1430 here at KYKN. Senator Brian Boquist is in the news. So he's been a senator since 2009. He's Polk County.
All right.
He's a Republican. In the minority, of course. Two things. There's two things he's in. He's suing Senate President Courtney and others and so forth over the tax law that was passed. So the Trump tax bill from last year had certain pass-through provisions for small business owners. I have to talk about how that works. But small business owners that, let's say you own a business and you're incorporated, but what happens is that your tax burden, your income, gets onto your personal tax return.
Come on.
So, yeah. It's a good thing. So, the Trump tax bill had some pass through provisions and some benefits and some tax cuts for those kind of small business people, and the state said no, that affects us, and they kind of, I'm going to get this wrong. So Brian, if you're listening, make sure you call. We'll get you on the show.
Right.
Anyway, he objected to how the bill was passed. Thinks it's unconstitutional. Oregon is making exception to make sure they can get taxes out of the small business people by bypassing or exempting for the state tax purposes these benefits that were coming to small business people.
Wow.
So I purposely left that vague because if I tried to give you details, I would get it wrong.
My brain would explode too.
So Brian Boquist, keep up the good fight. Senator Boquist, I'm sorry. And also he's getting scolded by Senate President Courtney. because he thinks his tone is a little hostile.
What?
Yeah. Yeah, I think they're feuding a little bit, and we haven't even gotten to session yet.
Nice.
So that's also in the news. So Senate President Courtney telling him to kind of step down that tone, and Senator Boquist is not taking kindly to that. But we really have to get Boquist. He's got a fascinating guy. Served in the military. Mm-hmm. Spent overseas and this and that.
We should have him on and discuss this.
Yeah, from Polk County. So in
Senator
within
Bob
reach
Quist.
Of KYKN on a lot of our business. So, oh well. Anyway, I forgot to mention one thing with the gasoline, because this is also affecting our pocketbooks.
Okay,
because we like people to know what's going to happen with their pocketbooks. The mayor talked about this when he was on. I think Mike Erdman talked about this when he was on. There was a city revenue task force. So how do they raise more revenue?
Right.
So a few things were floated. Some of them are still actively talked about. One of them is gas tax. City of Salem gas tax.
Hey.
All right. So
why?
And we talked a little bit. Gosh, all these things intersect in our region, right?
Right.
When we talked a little bit, when the police chief was here, how there's huge tracts of East Salem area that are not in the city limits. So if you looked at a map, if you pulled it up online, you look at a map of City of Salem, it squiggles back and forth along Lancaster Drive. So some things on Lancaster Drive are in the city and some are not. So
that's silly.
Yeah. So the Salem Center, the Lancaster Mall is in the city of Salem.
Willamette Town Center.
And across the street.
It's no longer Target. Lancaster Mall.
Oh, sorry. What is it?
Willamette Town Center.
All right. So that's in the city limits. But if you cross the street and go to Target, you're not in the city limits.
That's crazy.
So, yeah. So at any rate, the same is true with some of the gas stations over there. So when I was a gasoline retailer, the trade association really fought local gasoline taxes. And that's for what? Because there's these artificial invisible borders. And trust me, we're trying to make a living. We're taking home less than a penny a gallon, right?
Right.
But you might get a 1 or 2 cent city tax. So it's levied upon the guy on the left side of the street and not the guy on the right side of the street on Lancaster.
Yeah.
I think at the time there were like 9 gas stations on Lancaster. It was like half and half. And that's the thing that's problematic about the public policy. So hopefully, though, City of Salem citizens will have a say in that, and they'll put it to a vote and see if they want to tax their own gasoline and use the money for road repairs, right?
But I thought they already had money for the road repairs.
They get a portion of the state gas tax. So get a portion. The county gets a portion of that, and the cities get a portion of that.
And that's not enough.
Well, it depends on how nicely you want your roads to be.
Yeah, they always want more.
Roads are expensive.
It's amazing to me.
So, yeah. And we talked about how they used to pay, through gas tax, they used to pay for the streetlights.
I remember that.
So they removed that, which I think that's a reasonable argument.
Well, just put solar panels on each light and it pays for itself.
Hey, they're LED now.
Exactly. Put a little solar thing on top of it and you'd be good.
So they're saving all this money and energy and they can put those into our roads. Anyway.
Exactly.
I just wanted to, that's one of the factors that, comes out when people are talking about municipal gas taxes. And there are lots of communities now. I should have looked it up. I apologize to the viewer, but maybe 9.
Listener.
9? Yeah, viewer. Hey, what about our podcast?
Unless there's hidden cameras in here.
Leave it to Dave to point out every mistake I make. So that's your job.
I'm keeping track.
There are a lot more municipalities. I think Ashland was one of the early adopters where they have had local gas taxes. And I think it's actually more than 9 now. So say it wouldn't be an outlier for the city of Salem. I'm no longer in the industry or the business. So, but at least the public should be aware of, hey, if you are one of those people that drives halfway across town to save 1 or 2 cents, it's
not really
a huge
worth
difference.
It.
Yeah, and it's going to make a huge difference to the dealer.
Sure.
Because, here's the perfect situation. Four Corners, Lancaster at 22. There's a Chevron. There's a Shell. Across the street.
Right.
By Sportsman Warehouse, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. One of them's in the city limits. So how do you give one of those small business people, one of those small gasoline retailers, a 1 or 2 cent advantage over the other?
Yeah,
that's rough.
That is
that's rough when it comes to public policy. And a decision that voters have to make, and then it's hard for the industry to adjust. I know we were advocating, hey, if the cities and towns all need more money for roads and bridges and repairs and maintenance and such. Repairs and maintenance, because cities do not put in new roads, period.
Right.
So then do a statewide tax casting tax. And this was floated by the Oregon Gasoline Dealers Association way back. It's now the Oregon Petroleum Association or something. Say, raise the gas tax, but make it uniform and prohibit this patchwork. And that was a preferred public policy. Prevent a patchwork of taxation where different jurisdictions have different dollars. Because it is meaningful. That penny, that 2 pennies, is extremely meaningful to a gasoline retailer. All right, let's get off of that.
There's several gasoline taxes on different counties.
What else did the mayor say they were going to tax? They were floating ideas of...
Now we have to get it back on.
Yeah, we did talk about an excise tax on building, and I think that got shut down because it's contrary to their public policy desires in affordable housing. It's like, if you want affordable housing, you better not tax construction of affordable housing.
Right.
All right.
And charge the builder.
We'll be right back. You're listening to Brent and Dave on Newsmakers. KYKN 1430 Salem is listening.
Newsmakers continues with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Had to bring you down a little bit.
Chestnuts roasting on an open fire.
One of my favorites.
Breathe deep. Relax.
It's hard to relax when you're talking about taxation, I guess.
I know. It just raises your blood pressure.
I know. You had to go look it up during the break.
I did.
34 cents a gallon state.
Statewide, yeah. Okay. And the city of Portland is adding 10 cents more on top of that.
Just in the city limits.
Just in the city
limits. Don't pay it in Gresham.
No.
Don't pay it in Beaverton.
Don't pay it in Salem either.
Don't pay it in Waco. Right? But you have to pay it in Portland.
Yeah.
10 cents. And how many other communities?
Eugene has 5.05 cents. So it's not a whole lot. But, City of Portland, 10 cents. No, it's 0.10. Yeah, that's 10 cents 10 again. Cents,
yeah. How many other? You had a list of Ashland. I was right about that. Coquille.
Astoria, Canby, Coburg, Coquille, Cottage Grove, City of Eugene, City of Hood River, Milwaukee, Newport, and they actually lower theirs. It's higher during the summer months. Yeah. Go figure that.
This might be a whole other story. But actually, this Newport, goes back to about 2000, early 2000s. And it was just starting the conversation about electric cars and how electric cars weren't going to pay the gas tax, but the gas tax supports the road maintenance.
Correct. So they still use the roads.
Yeah. How are they going to collect gas money from the electric cars? And that cars were getting more efficient, so they're get more miles per gallon, blah, blah, blah. So that's going to reduce the income. And the brain children that live at the Capitol never tied the gas tax to inflation, starting in the 60s. So,
serious.
This kind of goes back to infrastructure, and I differ from some people, but I don't mind paying my taxes for infrastructure, and I want good roads. And so, hey, tax the gasoline, but give me good roads, right? And then they didn't tie it to inflation, so the increase had to be huge, and they haven't even caught up to what we were paying, having to do with inflation from the 60s. So the idea that was floated was to tax you on how much you drove, which would require a GPS, which wasn't really big in technology yet at the time. Put a GPS in your car, track everywhere you went, subtract the miles when you drove into Washington, and then send you a bill for how many vehicular miles you traveled.
Man, I'd have a big bill.
And you would have a big bill, and Big Brother would always know where you have been.
That's true, too.
That kind of felt icky.
It did.
I was not fond. I thought, you think the public's going to put up with this? And there seems to be a new generation of people that doesn't bother them any privacy issues, but I don't really want a record. I don't know. I got nothing to hide, but I want the government or my gas company or the tax man knowing exactly where I drove. I don't know. That's a hard one. That's a hard one. Anyway, gas taxes, 34 cents a gallon in the state, another 18 for the Fed and some change and some fees. And Just so you know, that is a lot more than your local gasoline retailer makes. So
that's in some towns and cities, it's up there at 55 cents a gallon.
Wow. All right. So I got some fun to talk about. And this came out in the news last week. It's exciting, actually. I love it. You know, I'm a downtown proponent. And in the news, there was a hotel proposal being floated. $43 million building in downtown Salem.
Okay.
So, and this would be in a location that's sorely needing redevelopment. So it is on the corner of Commercial and, what is that ferry? Oh, my gosh. Right across from the conference center, right?
Oh, okay.
And it is a dilapidated old parking garage, was a single pump kind of gas station back in the 50s.
I know where you're talking about.
All right. So it is ugly.
Mm-hmm.
It is an eyesore.
Unless
it is
a reuse store.
Around some very beautiful buildings. There's a beautiful building behind it. The conference center is beautiful. The new waterfront building is beautiful, or parkfront rather. Then there's the gas station.
Restoring it could be beautiful.
The property was purchased.
Yeah.
Person wants to develop it. There's a mock-up if you want to search the news about it. And here's one of the issues. It's in a historic district. So,
of course it is.
All right. So two things about this. One, it's in a historic district. And that means, and I've actually read the text back in the day, and it is a contributing piece of property to the historic district. So in a historic district, you might have buildings that are not historic and they're not contributing to the historic district. And you have contributing buildings and there'll be descriptions of what's historic about them, when were they built, and blah, blah, blah. And this thing, when they developed the downtown historic district, they made up some beautiful prose about how this parking garage made of concrete and at one time gas pump up front was a contributing factor to historic district because it was built in the 50s in the golden age of the explosion of the automobile. It was one of downtown Salem's first automotive related buildings and uses and blah, blah, blah. It seemed like they went out of their way to make it sound historic. And if you're as old as I am, the 50s doesn't sound like history, but
concrete building, parking garage.
Yeah. Part of the quaintness of the historic district.
Yeah.
So they have to go before the Historic Landmarks Commission and ask for permission to tear it down.
Wow.
Right. So they have to say, you know, what for whatever reasons, they'll have to go through that hoop, and try to make a case for that it's not contributing to the historic district and it's no longer, it's in disuse or whatever the case is going to be. That's going to happen this month. All right. But if they do tear it down, they're going to build the plan is to build a longer stay hotel, $43 million. So in comparison, the conference center back in 2004-ish mm-hmm. was $32 million, I think.
Wow.
So very exciting. We have that additional residential building coming up there on Front Street. So we got two of those facing the river. We got the office building facing the river. We got this potential for redevelopment. It is a Merry Christmas gift if they're going to move forward with this. And it intersects with the Opportunity Zone.
Nice.
That Kurt Arthur was talking about 2 weeks ago. So hopefully they can find some investors and do that and see some more exciting, great stuff in downtown Salem.
See you tomorrow.
We are out of town. This is Brent for Dave on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This has been Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne, presented by Les Schwab Tires on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.